Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. And there we have it. Welcome to a very, very exciting episode of The Good Listening To Show. This is another in the seven series strands, but this is the series strand called Best of Bristol Voices, which is setting out to help promote and amplify all the best of all the creative endeavours that are happening in my home city and community of Bristol. But the wonderful emergency duo, you'll see what they're doing here in a moment, Adam Baker and Charlie Fleury are here in The Clearing. So welcome both.
Hello.
Thank you very much for having us.
And if I may, hopefully enjoy this play on words, you're coming in for an ice swim, through The Good Listening To Show Clearing. You are about to do the most extraordinary thing. You're going to do, well, you're doing a polar swim. And if I'm right, you are mid-swim, shall we say. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're hoping to swim a nice kilometre in both the Arctic Circle and Antarctica. And we've just got back from completing our Arctic Circle swim. And then we'll be swimming in Antarctica in about 3 weeks' time, which is really exciting.
And it's very exciting with all bells and whistles. I can even show you everybody a show me your QR code, please. At the end, we're going to be raising money for your wonderful emergency duo. Now, you're called emergency duo, I know, because you both happen to be emergency doctors, which is the story behind that story. But let you tell that. So just get on the open road of the story behind the story, why you, husband and wife, Adam Baker, Charlie Fleury, call yourselves emergency duo. Over to you.
So yeah, we're both doctors here in Devon. We were both in the emergency department working. I'm still working within emergency medicine. Adam will come to tell you later that he's actually jumped ship to palliative care. But we created a husband and wife team to, originally our first challenge was to take on rowing 3,000 miles across the Atlantic Ocean for charity.
And that was the Talisker Whiskey Challenge as part of that. That was rowing the Atlantic, wasn't it?
It was, yes, that's right. Yeah, we were trying to be the first mixed pair to do that and also take on a second challenge, which was rowing around Great Britain in the same year. So a lot of rowing, a lot of blisters, you saw bottoms.
And yes, and you're the second pairing, actually, that have come into the Good Listening To Show to talk about the Talisker Whiskey Challenge.
Oh, amazing.
I know that statistically there are fewer people doing the Talisker Whiskey Challenge than have climbed Everest. So it is an extraordinary human triumph to be one of the very few that have done that extraordinary epic row across the Atlantic. So, you know, congratulations for having done that. And you hadn't done any rowing before you decided to take that on, had you?
No, that's right. Actually, at the time of the decision to take on this challenge, I was in a wheelchair. So I just had major pelvis surgery for hip dysplasia that I was unaware of, but was in a lot of pain that was preventing me from kind of walking, driving and doing my day-to-day job. And it gave me kind of purpose to complete my rehab and also something else to focus on, because it can be so frustrating, you know, not being your healthy self.
How extraordinary. My pelvis is in pain. I know what I'll do. I'll row the Atlantic. That makes you a dynamic duo as well as an emergency duo. But I love the title. I discovered you through Bristol Life magazine. I saw your article and that encouraged me to get in touch with you, because I thought it'd be an absolute pleasure to amplify all that you're up to. I'm going to just read a tiny bit of copy about you that you wrote about yourself. For your next challenge, you're quite literally going to the ends of the earth to take on an extreme swimming challenge. You are swimming an official ice kilometre in the frigid waters of both the Arctic Circle and Antarctica in nothing more than a standard swimming costume, a.k.a. Speedos, the comedian me has to say budgie smugglers in Adam's place. And then I like this bit, no wetsuits, no lard,
no excuses. Me being too lardy would be my excuse anyway, but you mean lard as in plastering yourself in lard to protect. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's one of those things that we get asked a lot when we tell people about the swim. And I think traditional channel swimmers used to do that. But yeah, for this challenge, literally nothing but that standard swimming costume allowed.
And how has part one gone? Were you at the Antarctic sort of leg of it, or were you doing the Arctic Circle one first?
So it was the Arctic Circle that came first, and we thought we'd go north to start and then we'll head south. Partly because the Arctic Circle is a little bit warmer. So the water was 3.3 degrees centigrade. And then in Antarctica, we're probably expecting somewhere between zero and minus one. But yeah, it was a beautiful, beautiful place to have a swim. Absolutely incredible to swim in front of this glacier there, and incredibly remote.
And how close to each other were you? I'm assuming you kept each other very close during it because you're doing it as a dynamic duo.
Yeah, so we ended up swimming one at a time just for safety. And so I think for Charlie, tell how that was tricky psychologically, because she had to watch me swim and get out and rewarm, looking pretty ropey, having been in the water for 55 minutes. So I think that was a really interesting thing for Charlie to have to watch and then go and compete herself.
And then you have I suppose you have a sort of who was more blue off at the end of it when you finish, because you've got photographs, I'm sure, as well. You're both smiling beautifully as if it was good and you've succeeded. So how are you feeling about part two, please?
Oh, I think some of it's nervous kind of smiling and laughter, because it honestly was so, so brutal. And there's just no escaping from that kind of extreme environment. And no matter how much training you do psychologically and physiologically, that water, it's just going to take over. And so we had trained for 18 months, trying to get as fast as possible, getting used to the cold water, mitigating any cold water shock response. Yeah. And then also trying to get a little bit fat as well, so that we did have some insulation and won't cool as quickly. There's no other word to describe it than absolutely brutal. And actually, it's not just getting in that's hard, it's then swimming with the loss of kind of your proprioception of your arms and the power in your arms, because you're getting all this cooling, which is causing kind of a decrease in your neuromuscular performance. And then once you've managed to complete it and you're slightly kind of delirious with either happiness or hypothermia, you then have to rewarm as well, which is incredibly painful and can last kind of hours. So we're absolutely ecstatic that we managed to complete the first swim, but very nervous that the second one is even more remote and probably a lot colder as well.
And I loved your expression from either happiness or hypothermia. That must be a very thin dividing line between both, actually.
Yeah, it's a very, it's a bit of a sharp knife edge between the two.
And is there a medical team looking at you as consistently as they can? Are you being monitored and sort of apped up to sort of work out what's happening to you?
Yeah, it goes back to basics a little bit. So it's based on your stroke rate is continually monitored and how you're looking in the water.
Yeah.
The team that we took to the Arctic Circle knew us well and what we looked like when we were in a good place and in a bad place. There was a medic there that we trusted, and there was an official from the International Ice Swimming Association. So we felt, very safe and in good hands with the team we had.
And as you said at the beginning, Charlie, Adam has jumped ship, as you said, to a hospice care. I know that's one of your charities that you are raising funds for. I think that's the Western Hospice, is that right?
Yeah, so I work for Western Hospice Care, who support people at the end of their lives, both in Somerset and North Somerset.
Yes.
And it costs in the region of kind of £5 million a year to run, only 18% of which is government funded. So there's lots of projects that are going on that the money will go towards. And then our second charity is the Ocean Conservation Trust, who look to connect people with the ocean in order to protect it. So we're really proud of those two charities.
It's such a commendable side hustle that you're both doing, because I know being full-time doctors is of itself incredibly pressurizing. And of course, then you decompress by getting very cold. So I commend you both. It's my absolute delight and privilege to be able to curate you through the journey of the Good Listening To Show and the storyscape that I've got for you. It's going to be a clearing a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. Hurrah! So it's absolutely all to play for. So shall we get you on the open road of curating you through this structure?
That sounds great.
That sounds good.
And I'm very intrigued to know how, as a duo, you're going to answer this question. So what is a clearing for you both then? Where do you both go, or where do you individually go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think? Where is your serious happy place?
So we share a clearing, and for us, it's anywhere by the sea. So I think in particular for us, around the Rain Peninsula in Cornwall, it's near a coastline where we got married and holds a lot of importance to us. But I think being by the water and the open ocean is really important to us.
And did you meet through sport, or has your sporting acumen developed in your relationship?
So we actually met in the first week of university, and I was late to a tutorial because I couldn't find the room. So I walked in, clocked Charlie at the back of the room and thought, oh, she looks great. Later, Charlie tells me that she just thought I was an idiot because I was late.
And of course, we're all asking the question, were you late to your own wedding as well, please?
Thankfully not. I was on time for that. Yeah.
Yes. You have to be at the front, don't you? Ready to go, ooh, as they come, as Charlie came forward. That's lovely. So she thought you were an idiot, but you thought, oh, late, yeah. But ding dong was what happened to you.
Absolutely.
You called it the Rain Peninsula, didn't you?
Yes.
So now I'm going to arrive with a tree in your clearing to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. I've got a couple of comedy props. How'd you like these apples? So now this is your interpretation of a lovely construct called 5-4-3-2-1. You've had 5 minutes to have thought about 4 things that have shaped you, 3 things that inspire you, and then 2 things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's where the squirrels are going to come in. You know, what never fails to distract you, whatever else is going on for you in your hectic lives of both being in obviously medical emergency stuff and hospice care, but also anything else that distracts you. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you both. It's not a memory test, so over to you. I'll curate you through it, but shake the canopy of your tree as you see fit. So over to you.
So yeah, let's put a lot of thought into this. And I think the first thing that probably I would say has shaped me is actually using up one of my 9 lives. And it's a little bit ironic being in emergency medicine and seeing how precious life is, and knowing that there is that that mortality and being very aware of it. But until something actually happens to you, I think you kind of just put that thought aside and think you're never going to be that person that becomes aware of how fragile and precious life is. And we had got engaged, moved out to New Zealand, we're both working out there as emergency medicine doctors, pretty much ticking all the boxes and living our best lives. And unexpectedly, whilst we're on annual leave, I ended up having really bad right-sided abdominal pain, so much so that I was vomiting, I could barely walk, and I thought, oh, I've probably got appendicitis. Went into hospital, and all I remember was the unbearable pain and fear, and ended up, unbeknownst to me, having a cecal volvulus, which is just a your bowel kind of twisting on itself, which is very, very uncommon in my age group, because I was in my 20s at the time. Usually you see it in very elderly people or very young people. So it wasn't a diagnosis that anyone was expecting. But I woke up the following morning with a scar above my belly button all the way down me, where they'd have to open me up and do 7 hours of emergency surgery. And woke up on my own in a room thinking, oh my gosh, what have they taken from me? What's happened? And just feeling so, so vulnerable. And I think having that moment where you become, kind of in control and trying to be people's advocates and be the person to help them and care for them, then being on the flip side and being the patient and realizing that you were so lucky that you were close to hospital, because 12 hours later we were due to fly to Queenstown, where there isn't a hospital around, 200 kilometers away from a hospital. So had this happened there, it could have been a different story. And I think just being in that vulnerable position, realizing that life is so short and that actually I don't want to just cruise by. Not that it had been a cruise, like I have worked really, really hard to get where I am, but to take every single moment that I can and kind of push myself, push boundaries, explore, be adventurous. Don't just kind of stay on that treadmill of everyday life, just turning up to work. And I think that was one of the things that probably shaped me.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
You've already used up one of your 9 lives as a cad. That's extraordinary, because that was obviously life-threatening. And yeah. If for different geography, it could have... it really was life-threatening by the sound of it, with hours to spare.
I think that's partly what then went on to draw me to this challenge of the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge and wanting to row across the Atlantic, being so remote, pushing your boundaries physically and mentally, and not having anyone else to rely on, see how much you can achieve on your own against like nature. And there was a moment on the Atlantic where everything went pitch black. You were away from land. You had no light pollution. All the navigation lights from all the other boats had disappeared. You're all spread apart. There's nothing else around you. And this most incredible display of the Big Dipper appeared in the sky. And it actually looked like a question mark, which aligned perfectly with our compass on our boat. And in that moment, I just had the time to think and to question everything, like to question, what am I doing? What's my purpose? You know, what am I destined for? Like, how should I live my life? And yeah, it was one of those moments that's kind of stuck with me pretty much, and will do for the rest of my life.
That's such extraordinary storytelling, that the heavenly question mark aligning in the Big Dipper on your compass point. What's my purpose? I think that was beautiful. Wow. What a great first shape page that is. Did you want to add anything at this moment, Adam, as well?
Yes, I think we kind of split it. So those are 2 things that have shaped Charlie. And the 2 that I really thought about initially for me was, I think the big thing was coming off the treadmill. So we talked a little bit before about what's called the rum line, especially when we were looking at our ocean rowing. So the rum line in navigation is the intention of your journey. So it's kind of a straight line from your starting point to your end point. And from a really young age, I had a really solid rum line of what I wanted to achieve. So from very early on, I wanted to be an emergency medicine doctor. I knew what universities I wanted to go to. I knew what jobs I wanted after that to achieve the career that I wanted. And I didn't really deviate from that. And then what we found on the kind of the row is that it's great having that rum line, but it's really inefficient if you're trying to auto-correct the entire time to remain on that. And there was a lot of value in both the row and in life, in retrospect, of letting yourself to meander a little bit away from that line and seeing what happens. And I didn't go into the traditional training route for emergency medicine that I'd always intended to. And I took up a job that funded me to do a master's in extreme medicine, which is something I'd never considered really before. And I think it was from that we met some amazing people doing incredible things, and including someone that had done the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, that Charlie then decided that's what we should do together.
I like that. She decided what we're going to do together.
it is hard to convey just how ridiculous the suggestion it was at the time, in that Charlie was in a wheelchair and one of the world's most seasick people, in that we once went on a date on an estuary in Exeter in a cafe. It was a completely calm day and I could barely eat because I felt so sick. This notion that we as a couple were going to row the Atlantic was just completely absurd. I'd done a half marathon at that point. I think I was training for a half Ironman. So this kind of endurance world, extreme kind of challenges, it wasn't us. But just that path of coming off that treadmill, off that rum line, is kind of what led us there. And so I'm quite passionate about advocating that for other people. And
it's the gravitational pull away from the rum line, which has so defined your purpose, hence, ever since.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to always anchor back to it. I love the fact that you're open and adaptive and flexible, which is another great life allegory about adapt, change, evolve, or die, really.
Yeah, because I think it can feel really tempting. It almost feels counterproductive in that allowing yourself that little bit of flexibility in coming off those goals.
Yes.
And I definitely advocate for goal setting.
Yeah.
But I think just not being so hard-lined that everything must be working towards that, you'll end up missing opportunities along the way in what feels like you're doing it in the most efficient way possible. But actually, I think you miss out.
It reminds me of the idea or the notion of when you are setting a goal, you should set a horizon rather than a fixed point.
Yeah.
Because life will change, as you've both been attesting, if you know, because chaos happens, that's the nature of life.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
The other thing that really shaped me was burnout. And I think it's quite prevalent in healthcare and in a lot of other settings as well. And it's something that I'd heard a lot about growing up, but I never thought it would be me. I always thought it was this thing that happened to other people. But I found myself in quite a tricky situation a couple of years ago in that from that young age, I'd always wanted to be that emergency medicine doctor and I'd worked incredibly hard to get there. And I found myself a few years back on paper having my dream job and everything that I thought I wanted, but actually being the most unhappy I've ever been. And it was this horrible moment of realization of, is this it? Is this what I work towards? Why am I not happy? This is everything. And just a really horrible place to find yourself. And The Row came at an amazing time and it allowed me that space to really look at what it was that I liked about my career and what I didn't. And it was on the Atlantic that I decided to leave emergency medicine and go and work in palliative care. But some of the reactions I think are really interesting when you tell people that you're unhappy, and that even people that are really close to me and I really value their opinion would say things like, well, isn't that a bit of a waste if you change? And I do get that. And it almost felt a little bit like that in my own head, but it's along the lines of that sunk cost fallacy and that, yeah, I could absolutely have stayed in that career, but I was miserable. And also I think medics are really guilty of putting a lot of their self-worth in their career and their title. And I certainly had identified myself for so long as an emergency medicine doctor, but it was really scary thinking about what that meant if I left that all behind. And moving into then the kind of the palliative care side of things, we tend to kind of think about the start of our lives, and we obviously celebrate our birthdays every year. And then some of us are quite open about thinking about the end of our lives, not everyone, but not that many people think about the dash in the middle. Mm. And for me, there's a really lovely poem about the dash, which is about looking at how we spend our lives. And I'd realized on the Atlantic that I needed to change because I was so miserable. And so I think that period of burnout was really formative in leading on to things like the other rows that we did and the swims that we're currently doing.
Two things there. That's so relatable. The dash poem was actually at my own father's funeral less than 2 months ago.
No way.
My mother found it and was just really moved by it. And also, when you write your book, which I sincerely hope you will, have a chapter called The Sunk Cost Fallacy. I think that's beautiful. I'm really enjoying this. Thank you so much. We're still in the canopy of the tree. We might be at the point of three things that inspire you now. How would you like to interpret that?
So I think the first thing for me is, I've always been inspired by acts of kindness and selflessness. And it's really difficult in today's world to not always focus on the negative. Our brains have that bias for negativity. And throughout the challenges that we've done, we've met some extraordinary people who have been so unbelievably kind to us. So when we were rowing around Great Britain, we had people coming out in waders up to their neck, bringing us cold beers and fresh fruit on ice because they knew we were stuck in an anchor. Unfortunately, what was awful was though we couldn't accept it because we were doing an unsupported row and aiming for a world record. So
I should put a break behind you banking it on.
And then when we rowed past Scotland, a doctor that we didn't know came out onto the rocks to play his bagpipes as we went past, which was just incredibly moving. We had loads of random people sponsoring us from around the world. We had loads of corporate sponsors who were incredibly generous with both their time and advice in getting us to the start line. For the swims, the team that we work with gave their time to come and support us so that we could do it safely. And yeah, it always humbles me just hearing about acts of kindness. And that always, always inspires me that there are some incredibly good people out there doing some amazing things.
And I had no idea you could get up to your neck waders. I love the idea of that. That's your clothing line alongside your book. I love that. Wonderful. That's a great inspiration or two. Next.
For me, for this question, I think it is those moments of awe. And I thought kind of a lot about what awe is, and it's that feeling of something vast that's outside your frame of reference of reality, and it's like that mystery, that unknown, unexplained thing. And it can be either things like acts of kindness, so like moral beauty, or it can be found in nature or music. And for us, a lot of our moments of awe for the On the Roads and things were the incredible encounters we had with wildlife, the sunrises, the sunsets. And all of that is entirely free, and it gives you that moment of just pure magic and joy. And I think you don't need to row an ocean to find it. You know, you can just get outside amongst nature, and it just seems to like reset you. And in that moment, all your worries just disappear. You stop sweating the little things, and you realize you're something, a small part of something so much bigger than yourself. And so, yeah, those little moments of awe are what inspire me. Yeah.
Lovely answer. Thank you very much.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Anything else you'd like to say about inspiring? That seems complete to me, but just in case you're gagging to say the next thing.
I think it was our only last thought on it was that it's often people that are being their authentic self is what really inspires us. And we live in this almost hyper-curated world of people showing their best selves online.
Yes.
So it can be really hard to pick apart. So actually, we couldn't even find any specific examples, because often it's the people that are doing stuff without shouting about it that is what we're really talking about. But just people that love what they do and do it for the right reasons, I think is so inspiring to us. And you come across them every once in a while.
The unsung heroes.
Absolutely.
Well, I have an example, but my last guest, a wonderful adventurer called Darren Edwards, who's paralyzed from the chest down. And his unsung hero was his therapist, who gave him the best piece of advice he's ever been given whilst he was trying to recover.
Yeah,
that's an example. But anyway, thank you for those delicious answers. And now we're on to the squirrels, the two things that never fail to grab. It's borrowed from the film Up, by the way. I don't know if you've seen the film Up with that sort of completely heart-wrenching beginning montage. But when the dog goes, oh, squirrels. So what are your squirrels or monsters of distraction? And because there's two of you, you can have a squirrel each. How about that?
I think for me, this was laughter. And that's probably because my day-to-day job is seeing people on what's probably their worst day of their entire life, in painful moments, both physically and mentally, with a lot of stress, noise, shouting, crying. And so when you actually hear laughter and that kind of full belly contagious kind of laughter, you can't help but smile yourself. And so that never fails to grab my attention, because it's just so raw, isn't it?
Yes. You reminded me of a quote that I found during the pandemic, reading a very dark book on the cartel, but a beautiful quote within it was, "We have to laugh because laughter, as we already know, is the first evidence of freedom." Mm-hmm. Just thought I'd share that with you. You nudged that in me, so that's a lovely squirrel. Thank you so much. Sort of laughter in adversity. Lovely.
My one is that it's sunrises and sunsets, so they never fail to stop me in my tracks. And I think one of my favorite things about both the row across the Atlantic and around Great Britain was that for the 122 days we're at sea, we saw consecutive sunrises and sunsets. And I'll never forget them. And it was just incredibly powerful. They're basic, they're free. It's quite a primitive thing. But there's something about watching the sunrise and sunset, especially with a loved one, that is just something that I'll always try and stop to do and try and find time for.
Lovely. And now a quirky or unusual fact about you both that we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
So our one's a little bit weird, but essentially, Charlie and I aren't scared of dying, but we're both quite afraid of not really living. And I think that's possibly from our careers, and is a difficult one because we want to make sure that we are pushing ourselves and setting big goals and achieving things, but we want to make sure that we're doing it for the right reasons. So I want to make sure that we're doing it, that we're pushing for these things and not being pulled into them, and trying to balance that fear. It can be a little bit tricky sometimes, and just taking stock and making sure that we're doing these things for the right reasons.
Lovely answer again. Perfect, actually. Okay, we have shaken your tree. Hurrah! Next, we stay in the clearing, move away from the tree, and next we talk about alchemy and gold. So when you're both at purpose and in flow, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
So I think we have a problem with life not being fair. And I think we've both found flow and purpose and see a little bit as our role of trying to nudge the scales back in favour of the person. And we're in quite a privileged position to do that, both in emergency medicine and palliative care. And that we derive a huge amount of purpose from trying to nudge those scales back.
Wow. Again, phenomenally good answer. And now I'm going to award you with a cake. So I know you have to nutritionally prepare for your sort of, you pop into the various oceans of no temperature. But do you like cake, the both of you?
Absolutely.
Yes.
So are we agreed, because you're a very conjoined married couple, do you want the same cake or are we going for different flavours here?
I think we're probably going to go for difference.
Yeah. So what are we going for?
Coffee and walnut, because I definitely need the caffeine and it's delicious.
Love that. Good answer. Adam?
I do like a coffee walnut, but I'm going to go for Battenberg.
Go you, the Harley Quinn of cakes. Okay, now, Charlie, over to you, because now you've put a cherry on the cake with stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future? So over to you.
We had a quote that was on the inside of our boat as we rowed across the Atlantic, and that was, "The devil whispered in my ear, 'You are not strong enough to stand the storm.' Today, I whispered in the devil's ear, 'I am the storm.'" That means a lot to me because there has been a lot of negativity in life, and those kind of criticisms from people, and that inner critic as well. And I think you have to let go of all those criticisms that reflect values of somebody else that aren't necessarily, your values, and just go for what you want and go with gumption and with power.
And a deliberate act of reincorporation. Now we know that context. Can you say the quote again?
Yeah. So the devil whispered in my ear, "You are not strong enough to stand the storm." Today I whispered in the devil's ear, "I am the storm."
Boom. Lovely. And did you have a quote as well, Adam?
I do. Mine's a little longer. mine's a quote by Hunter Thompson that I fell in love with just before the rose, really. And I think encapsulates a lot of what we've been talking about. So it's, "Life is not a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a well-preserved body, but rather skidding in broadside, totally used up and thoroughly worn out, and loudly proclaiming, 'Wow, what a ride.'"
Thank you. Sorry, that resonates again because that happened at my dad's funeral as well.
Oh.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, sincerely.
No, not at all.
I've now recovered. That's good. And so with the spirit of reincorporation, just say it again because it's so rich.
Of course. "Since life is not a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a well-preserved body, but rather skidding in broadside, totally used up and thoroughly worn out, and loudly proclaiming, "Wow, what a rise."
Excellent. And now, what notes, help or advice with the beautiful gift of hindsight might you proffer to a younger version of Emergency Duo or you as individuals, obviously?
For me, I saw a flag recently that had, it wasn't a quote, but I guess a phrase that it just had "give a damn" on it. And it really hit me. And I think in a world that does feel a little superficial and showy, I think just that notion of just, yeah, actually caring and be willing to go that extra mile for things and putting the effort in, I think is what I'd convey to my younger self.
It's such a beautiful antidote to the famous quote, as we know it, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn." But actually, yeah, that "give a damn." Also, a through line that I'd just like to share with you that I think is really clear in what you're both doing. If I may say, your compass is pointing so true north. Yeah. Everything you're saying is oscillating around a sense of direction that's truly a compass pointing true north. It's wonderful to listen to you. Okay, so we might have covered this, but what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Mine comes from a slightly unusual place. So we were in the jungle on doing a part of our master's in extreme medicine, and the local guide, who didn't speak a word of English, kind of gave us some advice. And it was, control the 2 square meters around you. And it was in reference to surviving in the jungle. But actually, it hit me in that I think it's a rule that I've applied in almost every context now. So from our ocean rose, that was around controlling the variables that we're able to and having good kit admin so that nothing went overboard. We didn't lose kits, keeping on top of the navigation. To the swims, where it became more of a mental battle in that I couldn't control the elements around me, but what was in that kind of 2 meter radius was my mind. And just in general life, having control of that immediate vicinity around you, I think is incredibly powerful to give you a sense of autonomy and structure how you approach any given situation.
Again, fantastically eloquent answer. Thank you so much. Now we're ramping up to Shakespeare in a moment to talk about legacy and how you'd like to be remembered. But just before we get there, this is the Pass the Golden Baton moment, please. This is an invitation. And by the way, the first time I ever thought of Pass the Golden Baton, I had Roger Black in my clearing, and he'd only ever won silver in the Olympics. Mark Rate will too. How he laughed. He did really, but it was a bit like Pass the Golden Baton base. So my invitation is, now you've experienced this from within, who would you most like to pass the golden baton along to in order to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going?
We've decided to pass the baton to a chap called Duncan Roy, and he was actually our ocean rowing coach for crossing the Atlantic, and then became a very, very close friend. And he's one of those people, you know, an unsung hero. So he'll always be there. He was sending us via sat phone the occasional joke or the occasional kind of puzzles that we kept mentally stimulating through, you know, those 2.5 million oar strokes. He's just the most genuine and authentic and kind, caring, lovely person, who's also done some insanely crazy things. He's an ocean rower, so he's done the Pacific, the Atlantic, and now trains up ocean rowers and advocates for the sport as well.
Thank you so much. And your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to furnish me with a warm introduction to Duncan Roy. Help your uncle fanny your aunt. Lovely. Thank you for that. Okay, so now, Shakespeare, inspired by all the world to stage and all the withered merely players, this is the moment where we borrow the Jaques speech from As You Like It to talk about how would, when all is said and done, Adam and Charlie from Emergency Duo, how would you most like to be remembered?
So I think for me, it would be a bit like that poem, The Dash, someone who gave a damn, who gave it everything and really, really lived that dash with a sense of purpose and intentionality and did some wild things along the way. I think that is how I would like to be remembered.
I'm sure that legacy is virtually in the bag already, but for many more rows. I was also, I just wanted to mention as well, was it 2.5 million oar strokes, did you say, to get across the Atlantic?
I think that was our total in both rows. So I think it's 1.5 million for the Atlantic, roughly, and around 1 million for Round Great Britain.
Gordon Bennett. Wonderful. And how about you, Charlie? How would you most like to be remembered, Ed?
Adam and I are quite similar people, so probably similarly. And I think in life, I always, it's a bit sinister, but I do wonder like what my funeral will look like and things like that. And actually, I really don't care how many people are there as long as I've managed to have, you know, some really, really strong connections with some great friends. That's all that matters. I just hope that in my work life that I've just do make that tiny little bit of difference to people. I think that's it. Nothing grand or anything like that, but just that I've put a smile on people's face or I've made their lives a little bit better.
Lovely. If you could just tell us where we can find out all about you and your forthcoming swim, of course, and everything else that you're up to on as Emergency Duo.
Yeah, so the best place is probably our website, which is emergencyduo.com. And on there, there's links to donate. There's more information about swims. There's links to a charity auction that we're currently running with some amazing prizes. And then our socials are at emergency_duo, where we'll post frequent videos, both from the swim that we've just done. There's lots of stuff from all our rows on there. We're about 3 weeks away from heading off to Antarctica. So we're putting lots of updates about the training and the final prep for that.
As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, is there anything else you'd like to say, Adam and Charlie?
I think we're just incredibly grateful for all the support we've had to date. We really do love the two charities we've chosen, and we're a little bit behind where we wanted to be on our fundraising. So I think we're currently at 36%. So we're hoping to raise £20,000 for the charities. So if anyone did want to donate, it would make the world of difference to both those charities. But we're incredibly grateful for everyone that's listened. And people are more than welcome to reach out to us if they had any questions.
And I know I can tell you have a future, both of you, in keynote speaking, because everything you've said has been so motivational. Have you been doing that anyway, or is that not something you've plumbed yet?
We've started doing a little bit in an effort to raise some of the money for the charities. It's something we have started to enjoy.
Yeah, most of the talks that we've done so far are to medics, who probably think we're absolutely crazy.
I'm sure they don't. I'm sure there's a little frisson of awe and envy going on in the audience. But it's very inspirational. I was hearing all the chapter markings for all your various chapters you're going through. So, yes. If you're watching and, you know, you represent keynote speaking agencies, I would recommend Emergency Duo. They've been absolutely phenomenal how you've interpreted the questions. So thank you so much. You've been listening to Mika Scrimes. More importantly, this has been Adam Baker and Charlie Fleury from Emergency Duo. And just tell us the date of when you're going to have your next swim, please. When are you plopping in?
We set off on the 8th of November. I've got to get across Drake's Passage. So probably the swim date will be around the 12th of November.
The very best. Well, I hope it goes fantastically well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lovely. And because you work in the hospice movement as well, there is an outro coming up which reflects a series strand which is called Legacy Life Reflections, where my main cut and thrust is using the structure of this to record the story of somebody for posterity before it's too late. And just to share with you the story, I was mentioning my father's funeral. If I may dedicate this episode to the memory of my father, Colin Grimes, I did use him in a good way as my first ever guinea pig 3 years ago, just before he dipped into a crater of, I suppose, declining health. I got him in the halcyon days of his 80s, and he was about 83 at the time. He died when he was 87, just coming up to a couple of months ago. But I got him as my first guinea pig, recording a Legacy Life Reflections episode with my father, Colin Grimes. So I'm going to play the outro, which describes this, not my dad, but describes it. But thank you for the resonance you gave me during our discussion about what actually happened at my dad's funeral. So that was incredibly poignant. good for me too.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the Series Strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called Legacy Life Reflections. If you've been thinking about how to go about recording your life story or the life story of somebody close to you for posterity, but in a really interesting, effortless and creative way, then maybe the Good Listening To show can help. Using the unique structure of the show, I'll be your host as together we take a trip down memory lane to record the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 of either your or their life story. And then you can decide whether you go public or private with your episode. Get in touch if you'd like to find out more. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.